Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Tommy is about to books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. I'm your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
There's a switch on the front of my microphone. It's, it says pad, and one setting is negative 10 dB, one is zero. For the past 3 weeks, my microphone has been too quiet, and I've had no idea why. And in the seconds preceding this, I just found that little switch and flipped it, and all is fixed.
I had the same problem when I was recording Still Buff because I used that mic.
Yes.
Yes, that makes sense now.
The long nightmare is over with us audio professionals.
I just thought Riley was really loud. I thought, wow, I've never noticed how loud my sister is. Justin, I got an interesting email that inspired this week's topic.
Humble brag.
We are... What?
You got an interesting email. It's just
Well, I mean, Sawbones did. Sawbones, the show, did. Yeah. So you got it as well. It's just I'm the one who checks them.
I gotcha.
Literally, I have to forward emails to Justin's other email account for him to read them because I am solely responsible.
I feel I'm a digital professional and have been so for the past 15 years. I feel it's important for one person to have dominion over each email address, or else you're going to lose things. That things will slip between the cracks. Did I read that? Did I not read that?
Well, it's me.
Did I not respond? Yes, Sydney has volunteered in this case to
add it to the invisible work of women.
But it's
our invisible work that we are unappreciated for.
That's not fair because I make Griffin read my brother and me, and Travis read the Adventure Zone email. So it is spread around very evenly.
Yeah.
And Dan reads the empty bowl emails. But other than that...
Are there any more podcasts you do you'd like to plug? Or
I'm just plugging the fact that I don't read the emails. So it's just to be a bit. That's the bit, is that I make everybody else read the emails.
Can I tell you about the email now?
Yeah. I guess.
I got an email from Ashley who asked if doctors really do pledge an oath to Apollo. Is that what the Hippocratic Oath is? Are we actually like swearing to Apollo or pledging to Apollo? Like God of the Sun, Apollo.
Is that true?
Well, I had to stop after I read that email and think, did I? Did I do that?
If Apollo came to my door and was like, Sydney, I need a ride to the mall.
You pledged
an oath to me. I need $30. Would you have to?
Well, that's what I thought. You know, I've read the Hippocratic Oath many times in reference to various things on the show and about Hippocrates, but I couldn't remember what oath did I do, and was it that one? And it had some whack stuff in it, so probably not. So anyway, thank you, Ashley, and also Elise and Logan and Lee, who have also suggested this topic, because I thought we would dig a little bit into what the Hippocratic Oath is and what doctors actually do or don't do today, because it's changed. It's changed. Yes.
Now, this is a surprise to me, because you think... Hippocratic Oath. Well, one, oaths are like oaths.
Right.
You can't just like make one up. And Hippocratic, that fool was around hundreds of years
Hippocratic.
Ago. Hippocrates mm-hmm. was around.
Hippocratic and Socrates.
Hippocrates was around hundreds of years ago.
Plateau.
Okay. Is this the kind of episode it's going to be where you're just going to be giving me static the whole time? That's fine. I don't even care, Sydney.
400 BCE. That's when... Supposedly.
So yeah, tens of hundreds of years ago.
Supposedly. Although, you know, there's been debate over whether, was it really Hippocrates? Was it sort of like a group effort, like physicians who studied under Hippocrates, like part of the Hippocratic school? Was it something that was done after him, maybe? Like, in his honor, but after he had already died? there's a lot of debate about this. And I'll get into some of the reason there's debate is some of the stuff that's in it that doesn't seem to jive exactly with the rest of the Hippocratic corpus, like the rest of his body of works. Mm-hmm. There's some stuff that, you know, I don't know if this makes total sense. Now, it was in line with Hippocrates in the sense that he approached medicine from a very holistic point of view, right? The idea that it's not like there's a thing, there's an issue on this arm, and here is the thing that goes on this arm that treats that thing for arms, whatever. The idea that, like, the whole person was the patient.
Okay.
I know what you're going to say. I know where we're going with this.
Okay.
That you can't treat... You can't treat a disease.
Patch says you treat the disease, you win, you lose. You treat the person, you win every time. Coming to theaters this fall, Patch Justin McElroy stars in The Patch Adams, a remake of the original Patch Adams. His generation's Robin Williams, Justin McElroy, takes on those big floppy shoes and that hilarious stethoscope.
Was it a hilarious stethoscope? I think it was just a regular...
Every time you put it on their chest, it makes fart noises.
Normal stethoscope.
Every time you put it on their chest, it makes fart noises.
The nose was the thing.
Yeah, but every time you put it on their chest, it makes fart noises. That's in the new one.
That's my nightmare.
Yeah.
By the way, if I go to the bad place when I die, it will be... I'll have to use a stethoscope that makes fart noises all the time.
Well, it's tested very well with audiences in The Patch Adams, starring Justin McElroy. So we're probably going to leave that bit in. Sorry.
So anyway, that general idea that there is something special about medicine, about the medical art, about being a physician in terms of how you relate to your patient, that idea is very in line with Hippocrates. And that's what the oath speaks to, right? The idea that this isn't just about like... Oh, you have a sore throat. Here's the pill for sore throat. Bye. It's how are you feeling? How is this affecting you? What is it doing to your life? How can I help improve all of that?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a much higher calling, so to speak, than what is the thing that treats this illness. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
So the original oath, and I don't want to read the entire thing. I want to kind of...
If you read it out loud... That's binding.
Then I've taken it.
Overwritten your last oath.
The original oath, I want to kind of go through some of the points of it that make it, you probably will guess, have been changed in today's world. First of all, it does start off, I swear by Apollo, physician, by Asclepius, by Hygieia, by Panacea. So it's not just Apollo. You're swearing by a lot of gods there.
Right.
So... Yes, that is true. Now, I will say that I am 99.9% certain I did not say that.
You would remember all that, right?
I have looked up. I have tried to Google what my medical school, which oath they took.
I was going to look for your I thought I filmed your induction, but I think I was thinking of my cousin Megan, who I filmed her induction.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think you're right.
I remember that. It's basically the same thing. Although, wouldn't it be the same now that I think about it?
It should have been the same.
Probably.
I mean, well, med schools have changed over time, but most have kind of picked one and stuck with it.
I swear by... Okay.
And by all the gods and goddesses. Actually, that's the next part. So you're swearing by all the gods and goddesses.
What a waste of time! I swear by... I'm going to edit on the fly. I swear by all the gods and goddesses.
There you go. You don't need to name any. But they name the important ones,
yeah.
I guess. So some of the things you're swearing to do. So here's your oath. First of all, you're going to hold your teacher in this art equal to your parents. So like whoever teaches you medicine is like your new
medicine dad
or medicine mom. Him. Either way. Medicine
Not back
parent.
Then. Not back then.
Well, yeah. When he is in need of money, to share mine with him.
What?
Yeah, if I'm learning medicine from somebody and they need money.
Hey, Hippocrates, it's Dan, the medical teacher. Listen, can you slide? I got a lot of what you slide in for.
Can you see? Do you know how much trouble I'd get in if I started hitting up my medical students and residents for money?
Can you just put
That'd
a line
be so
in there.
Wrong.
Put
That'd be so wrong.
Put a line there about like if your teacher's hard out for cash, you're just going to slide them 20 drachma.
On the flip side, you pledge to teach your art without fee.
That's why your teacher needs money.
This is a problem, and obviously has been changed in modern versions, because as you may or may not know, medical school is really expensive.
Yeah.
So we definitely charge medical students, I would say, as a former medical student, too much to be a doctor. I will use treatment to help with sick, according to my ability and judgment. Yep, that's good. Don't do injury, no wrongdoing. I will not administer poison. That's good.
Well, actually, you know, I bet y'all can't do that anymore, though, right?
No, because...
stuff like chemotherapy.
Right, that has toxicity but also benefits. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, obviously things are more nuanced than this. And especially the next two sections speak to, one, that you will never cause an abortion, and two, that you will never, what they say, use the knife. Basically, they're saying I won't do surgery.
Mm. Now, is that because it was a different...
It was different. Surgery was more of like a... trade, like a skill.
So this is why, like, I'll stay in my lane.
Yeah, it was. It was kind of like, I'll do the things I know how to do, but it also specifically prohibits abortion. And these are two of the reasons why people have debated over whether Hippocrates actually wrote this, just to kind of get into that. Other places in Hippocrates' writings, he talks about how to do surgeries. Specifically, they mention on sufferers from stone. They're talking about like kidney stones or bladder stones here. Uh-huh. And they say, like, I will not cut for the stone is another quote you'll hear. Uh-huh. Well, he describes how to do that. So it seems weird that he would have you take an oath never to do it and then also describe how to do it. Mm-hmm. I think the idea that stay in your lane is part of this, sure. But it's a weird...
Yeah.
It's a weird phrase. Same with abortion. He actually describes how to do one in another place in his writings without any sort of like commentary on whether or not you should. And so it seems weird that then that would be put in the oath that you shouldn't later. So that's part of why people debate, like, was this added later maybe and wasn't...
Somebody trying to make a point?
Yeah.
Wow.
He says that... into whatever houses you enter, you will not do any wrongdoing or harm. You will not abuse the bodies of man or woman, bond or free. Part of this is that I won't have sex with my patients. It's part of what is being spoken to. That part stays the same throughout all oaths, pretty much.
Seems sound.
Most oaths you take say don't do it with your patients.
Please.
Please.
Please, doctors.
And he also says, whatever I shall see or hear in the course of my profession, as well as outside my profession in my intercourse with men, if it be what should not be published abroad, I will never divulge, holding such things to be holy secrets.
No, I thought we weren't supposed to have sex with our patients. And he's talking about having...
Ha, ha, ha. Ha, 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 ha. So patient privacy right there from the jump. The things I learn, I will. And obviously that is still... true to this day. And then there's a part about, if I carry out this oath, I will get a great reputation, and if I break it and forswear myself, may the opposite befall me. So people will say bad things about me if I break my oath, is basically what that says.
And I'll deserve it because I knew what I was doing.
So as I have alluded to, there are some things in there that don't hold up in today's modern medical world. And there are some things that, again, do not seem to fall in line with even what we really understood of Hippocrates or the Hippocratic tradition of medicine. The fact that it has kind of a religious tone, you know, it has like this sacred, holy calling feel to it. Even that is a little contradictory to what we really think about, especially if we look at Galen, who kind of followed in the Hippocratic tradition. It's a lot more pragmatic. It's a lot more about, we've learned all these things that can help people feel better, but it's not, I'm doing it because of a sacred trust. It's, I'm doing it because I learned how and I'm good at it.
Right.
And so I do the right things because why would you do the wrong things? I want to be good at my job. Does that, you know, like that kind of difference. So it's debatable either way. Was it Hippocrates? Was it his followers? Was it some people who sort of followed Hippocrates but also wanted to make their own points, had their own spin on it? And has it changed over time? Because the oath obviously dates back to ancient history, but it wasn't used for all time. Mm-hmm. It was really rediscovered in the 1500s. So what happened between 400 BCE and the, you know, in 1500 CE?
Just a bunch of people out there, oathless doctors, making it up as they went along.
Doing whatever they wanted. German scholars translated it in the 1500s. And And basically, they kind of took some parts of it, but it was really adapted to, like, Christianity. That was the overriding value system that it was adapted into. So then when you start wondering, did Hippocrates really write all this? You have to start wondering, when it was translated and adopted, mm-hmm. were changes made at some point? I'm not suggesting they were. Nobody is. But, I mean, you know, you have to wonder, if stuff doesn't fit, where did these ideas come from? In the 1700s, it was translated into English and other languages, and it really became, that's when we start to see it become associated with medicine more and more. Mm-hmm. And you start seeing, like, doctors take that original oath that we just discussed from the 1700s on. So for a while, yeah, docs were swearing to all the gods and goddesses, including Apollo. Now, by the 1900s, the idea that we might need something more modern was starting to mm-hmm. take root, because most people weren't praying to Apollo.
Right.
By the 1900s. And especially after World War II, the idea of a real modern code that was taken more seriously, you can see why all of a sudden that idea might become more important. Prior to that, this belief that a doctor would use their skills and abilities to intentionally do harm or experiment on humans who were vulnerable, that idea was, I guess, theoretically possible, but wasn't really widely accepted. Mm-hmm. It was kind of just, well, of course a doctor will do the right thing. They're a doctor. After World War II, more and more people realized that, well, no, actually, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a doctor or not. All humans are capable of bad things. And so a code of ethics that doctors should enter into became very important.
Yeah, I can see that.
So the World Medical Association actually wrote the Declaration of Geneva. Mm. And it echoed many of the sentiments of the original oath, but it took it into, like, a secular world. No gods or goddesses.
Only man.
And they didn't and they didn't prohibit surgery. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, basically you should follow this code of, like, don't do bad things to people. Don't intentionally harm people. I won't experiment on people. I won't take advantage of vulnerable populations. I won't discriminate against people for race or religion and that kind of thing.
Seems sound.
Right. So some really basic ideas that made a lot of sense. What's interesting is a few decades after that, the USSR actually made their own version. Mm-hmm. You can find, like, the Soviet, and it's very similar to this oath from the World Medical Association, from the Declaration of Geneva, except that it adds, and you can find this where, like, you get this base oath that everybody takes, except for each organization or group or country or time has added their own little spin on it.
Paprika.
So they add into it, to preserve and develop the noble traditions of Soviet medicine, to be guided in all my actions by the principles of communist morality, and to always bear in mind the high calling of a Soviet physician and my responsibility to the people and to the Soviet state. They also add, recognizing the danger which nuclear weaponry presents for mankind, to struggle tirelessly for peace and for the prevention of nuclear war. Hmm. Which is an interesting thing to throw in a doctor oath.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think I am capable of many things. I don't know that I can prevent nuclear war.
Yeah, I don't know what you would, if there's a, no, I mean, I'm trying to come up with anything.
I mean, I would do it if I could.
For
like,
sure.
Like, I'm for that. Like, I am anti-nuclear war.
We're definitely, that is the side that we are both on, I feel like.
That's something that me and the Soviet doctors who took this oath have in common. I don't know that I could take an oath to do it, because I don't know how I would. But, I mean, if I can I, I'll pledge that.
Yeah.
If I have the opportunity to prevent nuclear war.
You're on it.
I will do so. I pledge to Apollo.
There's got
to
be more, Sid. We got hundreds of years left.
Yes, we do. And
dozens.
You probably want to know, all these oaths that I've mentioned are probably not the ones people are taking today, right?
Right.
So we are going to talk about what oaths are doctors taking today. But before we do that, let's go to the billing department.
Let's go. The medicines that escalate macabre for the mouth. So, Sid, we had some more
oaths.
Well, I guess different oaths, different permutations of the classic.
Yes.
The original flavor oath.
So there were some who still thought that a more thoroughly modern oath was needed.
Thoroughly modern oathy.
And so I want to talk for a moment about Dr. Louis Lasagna. Who?
Give me a second. I'm okay.
He is no longer with us, and it's a shame because I feel like if Dr. Lasagna was alive today, he would be a friend of the show. He'd be. I'm a big fan. There are moments when I'm researching this show. Let me give you a little peek behind the curtain. There are moments when I'm researching the show where I start to read about somebody in medical history, and I get this like shiver because I realize that I'm like connecting to them, like through time. I feel close to them, and like I hope that I'm carrying on some of the principles that this person embodied. I don't know. And I felt this way with Dr. Louis Lasagna. I'm getting like teary thinking about
it. I feel the same way about Dr. Louis Lasagna. Are you kidding me with this name?
He's a great doctor. Just
You're
listen.
Tearing up.
I am. Just listen. So he came from humble beginnings, the son of Italian immigrants. He studied at Columbia. He was fascinated by pharmacology. He went on to teach at Johns Hopkins. And in his more than 50 years in medicine, he became a consultant to the FDA and a lot of other organizations in the U.S., basically to help with the way that we study and develop and regulate drugs, medications. When he kind of came onto the scene, it was like the Wild West when you introduced a new medication. A pharmaceutical company could just send out samples to some doctors and encourage them to use it. And eventually people would just be using it, and you didn't have to have like randomized control trials to prove that it worked and that it was not dangerous and that it wouldn't, you know, kill half the people who took it and all that. And Dr. Lasagna was one of the people who were saying, listen, there is a way to do this. You know, we can do it scientifically. We can do this in a smart way. We can figure out which medicines work and which medicines don't, and we can give the right ones to people as opposed to just whatever makes a pharmaceutical company money. Right. So you already like this guy.
Yeah.
No,
you don't have to sell me on Dr. Louis Lasagna. I was down.
That is what he dedicated a lot of his life to. He wrote or co-wrote 655 papers. He wrote two very popular books, some other books too, but two very popular, The Doctor's Dilemma and Life, Death, and the Doctor, which, by the way, The Doctor's Dilemma, one of the books he wrote, was, here's one description of it, an unusually readable account of the complex development of medical practice from a confusion of superstition and ignorance in its earliest days down to its present. That could be our show, honey.
You're right. He was Sawbones before.
He was Sawbones before Sawbones was Sawbones. He talked about like popular alternative medicines and criticized them and why they weren't working and like took him to task. And then he talked about famous quacks.
We got to get this guy on the show.
Oh, he's not. He passed away in 2003. But.
Oh, sorry. I ruined the end of your story.
I already said that.
I know how you love to kill people at the end.
Anyway, he was a good guy. He fought drug companies. He fought their ridiculous advertising claims. He fought the price fixing. He fought hidden drug toxicity. He fought to tell doctors how to give appropriate doses. There was a time where if a doctor gave you penicillin and it didn't work for what you had, he would just give you more of it.
Mm.
Which isn't how.
It doesn't work that way.
Higher doses are not always the answer, and often they're not. So anyway, cool guy. He was also president of the Rochester Orchestra, and he funded a local dance troupe, and he had his own group, his own theater company called the Mighty Lasagna Players, which was
That's good.
Made up of the Department of Pharmacology, Medical and Toxicology students and faculty.
Oh, the Mighty Lasagna Players is my favorite third wave ska band, hands down.
And I introduce you to Dr. Lasagna because he wrote a new version of The Oath, and it became pretty popular as the years went on. I thought for a minute this may have been the one that I took, but there were some phrases that I feel like I would have remembered. First of all, it takes out all of the gods and goddesses. You just swear to fulfill.
To whatever you kind of...
To whatever you choose to swear with. To yourself, to whatever gods, goddesses, or not divinities you choose. Basically, that you're going to do the right thing. You're going to use your knowledge to help people. That you are going to, I like this, avoid those twin traps of overtreatment and therapeutic nihilism.
Yeah, we could use some of that.
I feel like I would have remembered that.
Yeah, therapeutic nihilism is very punchy.
He talks about how he'll respect the privacy of his patients, mm-hmm. right? I will not be ashamed to say I know not. Man, that's important. That could, that you need to say that once a year in medicine. I think that's an important thing to say.
I say it once a day.
In life, right? Not just yeah. in medicine, in all things. And that he talks about treading carefully in the matters of life and death. If it is given to me to save a life, all thanks, but it may also be within my power to take a life, this awesome responsibility must be faced with great humbleness and awareness of my own frailty. I must not play at God. I think that, so kind of talking to some of the ideas that they previously discussed in the oath, but with more nuance.
Yeah, and it's also a little bit more, what's the word, like readable, like prose, mm-hmm. like, I don't know, I'm not good with, I don't know, language stuff.
He says, I will remember that I do not treat a fever chart, a cancerous growth, but a sick human being.
So he is sort of saying there, if I could right. go inside, uh-huh. what he's yeah. sort of saying there is you treat the disease, you win, you lose. You treat the patient, you win every time. The Patch Adams coming to theaters. It did get delayed since the first half of the show. It's now going to be December 2025, but it is going to be all CG. We're taking a lot of extra time, so... it's gonna be a huge flick.
Everybody's very excited.
We may break it into a two-parter. That's kind of on the fence.
He mentions that prevention's better than cure. If you can prevent.
Sure.
That you're a member of society, you have obligations to society as well, and you know the same kind of stuff. It was updated around the same time period by another doctor, Dr. Louis Weinstein, who also said, and I thought this was a good addition to it as well, I shall have the highest respect for human life and remember that it is wrong to terminate life in certain circumstances, permissible in some, and an act of supreme love in others.
Whoa.
These are some of the things that have been debated over time in the oath, is because what the oath is speaking to are the same issues that are debated not just in medicine, but in society today.
Right. It's trying to solidify an ethical code that is, like, by its very nature, like, sort of in flux. Like, it's...
Right. And is also variable depending on the person who is practicing medicine.
Sure. Yeah.
So, I mean, they're talking about abortion, which we mentioned in the very first oath. But they're also talking about...
euthanasia, right?
Yes. Physician-assisted suicide. So... all of these things are being kind of rolled into it, and depending on who is writing it and who is interpreting it, it's different. Mm-hmm. Which is why you can see where, as I'm going to get into, not everybody even agrees that we should have an oath nowadays. In this modern world, there are a lot of doctors who are like, I don't think this is relevant to me whatsoever. I'm not saying I'm one of them, but there is an argument that many make that this whole concept is flawed. I found one called An Oath That Bears the Name of Hippocrates.
It's a little wordy.
Which I do think actually may have been the one I took. It's a little more, I do solemnly swear by whatever each of us holds most sacred.
Very, very general.
Just about being loyal to medicine and lead my life in uprightness and honor. And then the same kind of stuff. I won't hurt people. I'll try to help people. I will keep my patients' secrets, and I will forever be thought of as a jerk if I don't. I mean, you know.
That's what it says right there.
Kind of a very vague general thing. In the 80s, the AMA, the American Medical Association, introduced a code of ethics, which basically was supposed to replace all these oaths with, like, a set of rules, a set of statements. These are the ethics of being a doctor.
Right.
And basically it was, you should do things that are in the best interest of your patient, that you should respect their rights and of your colleagues, that you should keep learning, keep studying, because stuff changes, mm-hmm. And that you shall, you know, take care of people and improve your community. I mean, it's very like... that we don't need a sacred oath for this. These are just the things that
you do.
These are the job requirements.
Yeah.
You know, which should have taken care of it. And that's what a lot of people argued. It's funny because if you look at, like, in the 80s, mm-hmm. a pretty small percentage of medical schools were taking an oath at graduation.
Really?
Yeah. Like, a lot of doctors who graduated back then weren't, that just wasn't part of the ceremony. By the year 2000, almost 100% of U.S. medical schools were taking an oath.
That's so interesting.
There was a huge shift in that time. Now, what oath were they taking? It varies. A lot of people were taking some version of that original Hippocratic oath, probably that one I mentioned that I think is the one I took, an oath that bears the name Hippocrates. Mm-hmm. Some people are using the Louis Lasagna oath. That one was very popular. There are other oaths as well. The oath of Maimonides is one that I found was taken a lot by pharmacists, but also by some medical schools. He was a medieval Jewish philosopher who was a preeminent Torah scholar as well, and wrote about a lot of different things, medical, legal, ethical, religious, lots of different writings. And there's an oath that it's a little shorter and to the point, and it's a lot more calling to a higher power. It's a lot more religiously focused, but the same idea, and a beautiful oath that you can take in some medical schools as well. Again, about, you know, taking care of people and doing good and not doing it for your own glory, but doing it for the right reasons and that kind of thing. Although similarly to the Oath of Hippocrates, it's questioned whether Maimonides actually wrote it. It's the same idea. You get these. I hope that if anybody ever like gives me an oath that I didn't write, I can't imagine that would happen, but I hope if someday there's like the Sydney Oath, the Oath of Sydney, and it's something that like I didn't actually write, but I'm given credit for it throughout all of human history. I hope it has good stuff in it.
Yeah, you think it will at least capture your essence.
I hope so. I hope it's like, maybe you can even like say what other people said and just attribute it to me as long as it's good stuff.
Yeah,
just like
cool, smart stuff.
Be excellent to each other, Sydney McElroy. But in 2019, an updated oath was offered up there in conjunction with the World Health Organization with the thought that we need a new oath, which is interesting because, as I said, there are many who think we don't even need an oath at all. But the new oath adds the line, "I will protect the environment which sustains us in the knowledge that the continuing health of ourselves and our societies is dependent on a healthy planet."
Oh,
so
wow.
An updated oath that calls to our personal, I guess, even as again, I would say that if I as a physician can stop climate change, I am so down for that.
Yeah, way into it.
But it's interesting because as humans, we're all called to do that, I think.
Sure.
It's all of our responsibility. It's interesting that you would put it directly into the oath that a medical student would take.
Yeah.
Which is why I think you get a lot of controversy around it today. Do we need an oath? Is there any reason? What happens if you violate the oath?
Nothing.
I mean, unless you committed malpractice or like did a crime.
And you don't really need to take an oath to follow the laws because the laws just kind of force you to follow them.
Right. You have to.
Right.
By the way, there's a different oath. I didn't know this. Osteopathic physicians take a different oath.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Osteopathic oath, which is similar. Again, very similar, except it specifically says like you'll develop the principles of osteopathy. So like it, you know, specifically mentions osteopathy. Yeah. And there are different oaths throughout the world. There's a Buddhist medical doctor's oath, the Vajravatapada, the 17 rules of Langja, which is for which was a Japanese traditional oath for Japanese medical students to take. There's the Oath of Asef, which is a code of conduct for Jewish physicians. There's a nursing code, the Nightingale Pledge.
That's
it's
cool.
Again, been updated over the years, but originally from Florence Nightingale. Do we need one? Do we need an oath? I mean, that's the question, right?
It's nice. I think it's nice to take an oath. It's a nice sort of like, you know, thing that says I'm a doctor now. It's part of like the you know, the ceremony, if
it
nothing else.
It is a very meaningful moment in the ceremony, even though I say that, but I don't remember which one I took.
Right.
I remember that there was a moment where they say, it is now time to take the Hippocratic Oath. I remember, like, feeling the gravity of what I was taking on in that
I think
that
anything
moment.
That imbues medical students, you know, soon-to-be doctors with, like, the sense of gravity of what they're doing, I think is a positive. I do have a question for you, Sydney.
Yeah.
We talked about this in this entire episode. I didn't hear you say, first, do no harm. Is that, like, I know that the spirit of that has been in some of them, but is that not part of the Hippocratic Oath?
That was a great question. I'm glad you brought it up because that was one thing I meant to address. It's not part of the oath. It's a common misconception. In another of his writings, Hippocrates wrote First Do No Harm, that the primary, well, the way he wrote it was the primary tenets of a physician are to do no harm and do good. Mm. So non-malfeasance and benevolence, which are two of the core medical ethics that we're taught. Do no harm and do good things. But it is not in the oath. The oath speaks to that, I think, for sure. But when people say it's from the Hippocratic Oath, that's actually not true.
Interesting.
Primum non nocere is not in there.
Yeah, another wrinkle for your noggin.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's the question today. A lot of doctors will argue that it's sort of redundant. If you practice good medicine, then you will, by default, follow the tenets of the oath. And so why aren't...
a compelling argument against it, though.
I mean, for me, it's the same idea as like an equal rights amendment. People will argue, well, we don't need it. It's redundant. Well, I would say that we do need it on one hand from a very like practical, like just because something is written into law doesn't mean it is always true. Anything that reminds us and re-solidifies the concept that humans are humans and should be treated as such is important. And likewise, anything that reminds physicians that the stuff you're doing is the power that you have, the skills that you've learned, the knowledge that you have can be used for great good, but also can be used and has been used throughout history for terrible evil. Mm-hmm. And so you should use that knowledge with the utmost respect and humility. And you should treat other humans with the utmost respect and humility. I don't think there's anything wrong with that because it when they say, like, I will not play at God, that sounds like a joke, like a stereotype, like, oh, you know how doctors are. They're playing God, whatever. It's really important, the knowledge that you have about other people's bodies based on your ability to interpret information because of the stuff you were taught. Mm-hmm. It gives you a knowledge and a power that the person sitting across from you might not have. Mm. And you should constantly be aware of that and constantly be seeking to balance that out by giving that information, teaching people, helping people, humbling yourself to other people. I do think that there is something about it that calls to more than just a job. I don't know. That's my opinion. I know anything can go beyond being what it is as a job to something greater. But I think that as a physician, you have to understand that and respect it, or otherwise you'll hurt people, or you won't, or you might not hurt people, but you won't do a very good job.
We will now take the Sawbones oath. I will, to the best of my ability, rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Sawbones, I recognize that all ratings and reviews and subscriptions help out this podcast, which is free. We've got a new Sawbones merchandise. If you head on over to McElroyMerch.com or McElroy.family and click on the merch link, you're going to find this new first off, we got a ProVax pin designed by Megan Cott. All the proceeds from that are going to go to the Immunization Action Coalition. Immunization Action Coalition. Mm-hmm. There we go. Got it. That's a group that's helping to, well, just what it says, try remind people that vaccines are great.
Mm-hmm. So spread correct information about the importance of vaccines.
Yes, that is a wonderful group. And we are so happy to support them with, we did with our vaccine shirts, which are still available, and the ProVax pin. We've also got a Cure Alls, Cure Nothing t-shirt now that is available in the store. And you can go get it right this second. I think it's really cool. What else? Thanks to the taxpayers for the use of their song Medicines as the intro and outro of our program. And thanks to you for listening.
Thank you.
Until next time, my name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.
There's nothing quite like sailing in the calm international waters on my ship, the SS Biopic.
Avast! It's actually pronounced biopic.
No, you dingus! It's biopic!
Who the hell says that? It's biopic.
Because it's the word for biography and picture.
If you...
All right, that is enough. Ahoy, I'm Dave Holmes. I am the host of the rebooted podcast formerly known as International Waters, designed to resolve petty but persistent arguments like this. How? By pitting two teams of opinionated comedians against each other with trivia and improv games, of course. Winner takes home the right to be right.
What podcast be this?
It's called Troubled Waters, where we disagree to disagree!